Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Back here where we need ya.
Back here where we need ya.
Yeah, we teased him a lot, 'cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Welcome back to me. This is the Saturday morning wake up call on this hot July morning, 7/7/2012, 31 minutes after 11 o'clock hour. We're taking you for the next hour or so as we discuss the world of sports. My name is, of course, Cyril Quinn. Been a while, a month since I did a wake up call. We'll get into that a little later. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. Follow me at twitter.com at William Jarrell. You can also hit me up on facebook.com/Cyril Quinn or find any opening audio or blogs that I might have put up there. Blogs that I put up there in CyrilJarrellQuinn.com. So certainly a new blog is coming very soon, as we conclude Wimbledon. And that's where we're going to begin. First of all, let me get you updated on the Serena Williams Radwanska match. Serena has just broken again. She's about to serve for the match in the third set, 5-2. It looked like a coronation at the beginning. She was up 5-love in the first set, ended up winning 6-1. But Radwanska, you know, stepped up her play. Serena served, went into the tank for basically a set, and Radwanska won the first, second set, 7-5. Serena was hitting the ball, spraying the ball all over the place. Gotten it back together in the third set, and now is ready to serve for the match. She's currently about to serve for the match to try to win her fifth Wimbledon title, which would tie her with Venus Williams, and would put her at Grand Slam number 14. Certainly, we will keep you updated on that. But The major news of the tennis world has to be what transpired yesterday afternoon, as Roger Federer does it again. Federer will defeat Novak Djokovic in four sets, relatively easy sets. He didn't really have to break too much of a sweat to win that match. Federer making his eighth Wimbledon final appearance, which is a record. He's 6-1 in his previous seven. His only one loss coming in 2008, which I consider the greatest tennis match of all time that I've ever seen personally, that classic against Rafael Nadal. And, you know, what can you say about Roger Federer? It hasn't been said. And, you know, I was talking, you know, went to see Spider-Man last night, so we'll talk about that as well. And I was talking to a buddy of mine who is a casual tennis fan. He's not a big-time tennis fan, not like I am. But he knows who Federer is. He knows Nadal, watches some of the majors. And the thing, and he made a great point about, you have to respect Federer, even if you don't like Federer. For whatever reason, there'd be no reason not to like Federer, because I think Federer is the greatest player of all time. Federer, even at his advanced age, at 31, which in tennis is like a dinosaur, let's be honest, refuses to give in to Djokovic and Nadal. I mean, if you're Roger Federer, if you've won, you've done everything that you can do in tennis. You've won 16 majors. You know, you're aiming for Wimbledon number 7, okay? Like, he's done everything that there is to be done in tennis and then some. Has a career Grand Slam with what he did in the French Open in 2009. And, you know, had twins, so he's a father now. You have no problem with Federer, you know, going quiet into the sunset, but he refuses to. I mean, it's like, listen, you guys want this, you're going to have to take this mantle from our cold, dead hands. That's what he's saying. Similarly, I mean, like Nadal and Djokovic, these are two guys who in their own rights, Nadal is already an all-time great. Djokovic has won four majors. You know, he's going to end up being an all-time great. So you're dealing with two beasts, as Serena Williams has just won Wimbledon, her fifth. We'll talk more about that in the next segment. You're dealing with two beasts in terms of being the number one and number two players in the world. Not just one great player, two great players, one all-time great and a soon-to-be all-time great in Djokovic. Djokovic is only 24, 25 years old. He's got five or six majors left in him, trust me. And Federer, again, it is remarkable the consistency level. And this is why Nadal will never be Federer. Federer doesn't lose second round of a Grand Slam to the 100th ranked player in the world. It doesn't happen. Federer has been in 33 straight quarterfinals. 33 straight. Put that in perspective. 33 straight quarterfinals. That's spanning 8 years worth of majors. That is that's beyond remarkable. It's something that you'll never see that in tennis again, ever, ever. Either a guy is going to lose, have a bad day, or he's going to be injured. And again, this matchup against Andy Murray, and let me not leave Andy Murray out of the equation, because Andy Murray, this is one of the great stories in tennis right now, as far as for one guy having to basically carry a country, Andy Murray becoming the first player from Great Britain ever, first male player ever from Great Britain to make a final. So that's to make a Wimbledon final, trying to become the first Great Britain to win a Grand Slam, to win a Wimbledon since Virginia Wade. How about that? So not to leave him out of the equation, but for Federer, he wins this match, he ties Pete Sampras all time with seven Wimbledons. He regains number one, which would tie Sampras' record for most weeks at number one of 286. And he probably, to me, adds probably two to three more majors to his credit. I mean, two to three more majors to his resume. I mean, this match could propel him to winning a couple more majors. Just energize him, saying, like, you know what, I can play with these guys. Now, let's be honest here. When Rafael Nadal went out this tournament, if you're Roger Federer, you had to be doing cartwheels, secretly doing cartwheels. As we all know, Nadal has been, his kryptonite, so to speak. So a big time match tomorrow. The majority of the crowd will be, Murray, considering that he is British, from Great Britain. But they still love Federer, though. It won't be 95-5. It'd be more like 70-30 as far as the crowd goes. But that will play no role in the match. You gotta like Federer. I can't see him getting this far and not seizing the moment, seizing the opportunity. When have we ever seen Roger Federer not seize the moment in a big spot? Nadal took it from him in 2008. That wasn't Federer's fault. That was just a phenomenal match. 2009 with the French Open, when he had a chance to win the Grand Slam with Nadal out the way, he took out Soderling in straight sets. I think this match would be a little bit tougher, but I can't see Federer losing tomorrow. And listen, Murray, give Murray a puncher's chance. You have to. Murray's a very good player, not on the level of Federer, not on the level of Nadal, not on the level of Djokovic. But Murray is the best of that next group of players after that, which is a tremendous fall off after you get past the big three in men's tennis. But, Murray will have his moments in that match. Certainly the crowd will be behind him, but you have to like Federer to take home Wimbledon number 6 and Grand Slam number 16. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, 347-215-6180. Hopefully we're going to have Mark Malusis join us to talk some baseball. We've hit the All-Star break, so plenty of surprises, a lot of good stuff to talk about in regards to the Yankees and Mets as well. So we'll talk about that, and we'll also do Saturday Morning Headlines and the week that was in NBA free agency. A lot to do on this busy Saturday morning. Stay cool out there. We'll be right back. Take 1 minute after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Been a while here, 3 weeks, been a whole month since we did a show for various reasons. Last week, of course, you had the power outage in the D.C., Metro D.C. area, which, you know, unfortunately, some people still don't have power, which is a sad thing, but that was the reason why we didn't do a show last week. But we are back here on the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 347-215-6180 is your call number. You can also, again, hit me up or follow me at William Gerald on Twitter at William Gerald, or go to my website, SurrealGeraldQuinn.com. I also have a surprise at the end of the program, just a little announcement that we'll be making. So we'll talk about that as well. So we have a lot to do in this busy Saturday morning. Wimbledon final just concluded. Serena Williams, of course, takes out Rawenska. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the girl's first name. I need to be honest with you. Three sets. I give Rawenska a lot of credit because, you know, your first major final, this girl is, you know, 23, 24 years old. Serena's lived in these matches basically her whole career. You're down before you blink. Before you blink, you're down 5-love. It easily could have been, you know, 6-love, 5-2, 5-6-1, one of those type matches. She fought back. She really fought back and made a great match of it. I mean, she took her to three sets. Serena's experience, of course, took over in the final set. And this is a match that Serena was supposed to win. And let's be honest. I mean, she's a better player, more experienced. But I give this girl, to me, will win some majors. Because, you know, Serena does not come to play in every major. To be fair about that, not to take anything away from her, but she did. I mean, she doesn't show up every major. This is one of the ones that, of course, she loves in Wimbledon. This is her fifth Wimbledon title. Serena now has 14 majors. 14-4 is her record in majors all time. Of course, she lost to Venus a couple times. She lost to Sharapova once. And I'm trying to think of the other one that she lost to. I'm thinking either Hennin or Clijsters. One of those two, I would assume, because those were the dominant women's players in the era, along with Venus and Serena. So, you know, Serena, not to try to downplay, you know, the fact that she's won Wimbledon. It is the most prestigious tournament in the world as far as tennis goes. But no shock by any stretch of imagination that Serena won this tournament. Her serve was tremendous throughout the course of the tournament. She had over 100 aces, which is more than anybody, male or female, over the course of the tournament. Set the women's record for most aces in the tournament and most aces in a match, the previous match with 24. So she played great. And, you know, if she's interested, she does have a chance, you know, for an outside chance. I believe Steffi Graf has 22 career majors. Outside chance to reach that. I just don't think she's gonna stay interested that long to reach that. You know, she'll have to win a couple majors. I can see Serena, you know, winning basically one major a year from here on out. I don't see Serena winning multiple majors, you know, two to three majors in a year. She just, you know, she has other things that are a priority in her life. She's involved in a lot of the stuff. So, you know, I think that she'll, you know, she can win. She has about two or three more majors in her, to be honest with you. I can see her getting to 18. getting 18 and tying Chris Evert and tying Chris Evert. So, you know, it's a great win for her. She hadn't won a major, similar to Roger Federer, who hadn't won a major in over 2 years. So it's a big time win for her. And you know, when she's on her game, she's still the best player in the sport without question. When she's on her game, but it's just, you know, her being, there's those times where she's on her game, it's just few and far between in recent memory. So just keep that in mind. Also, Ray Allen will be a new member of the Miami Heat. He'll take the 3-year deal for $6 million. This, you know, if you're a Celtic fan, it's not the fact that he left your team, it's the fact of who he went to. You know, your arch rival in the same conference team that you have to deal that's put you out the playoffs the last 2 years, including this year, and of course losing the game 7. That's the part that bothers you the most about this deal. And to me, it shows how sour that Boston was on Ray Allen. The offer was out there. The offer was out there for 2 years, $12 million. But it seems to me like Allen, I shouldn't say how sour Boston was on Allen, but it seems to me like Allen, you know, was at a point to where he's like, look, you know, listen, it's not about just so much winning, but I'm going to get more playing time with Miami. Dwayne Wade is injury prone. I mean, Ray Allen could be starting with Dwayne Wade's injuries. Dwayne Wade's going to have a hard time staying healthy for an 82-game season. He's not playing in the Olympics. He's going to be coming off all-season surgery. So I can understand the move from a Ray Allen standpoint. I totally get it. Even from a Boston standpoint, I mean, they have Avery Bradley. They're going to sign Jeff Green. They added Jason Terry. So, like, they're not going to miss Ray Allen from that standpoint. The key is him going to a team that's better than you, frankly. That's the part that would be worrisome if you're a Boston Celtic fan. And again, get used to this. If you're a Miami hater, players, you know, at the end of their careers, shooters, former All-Stars are going to go and play for Miami because, number one, you're going to get open looks galore playing with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. I mean, you're going to get Ray Allen. It's going to be in heaven. So this is something that's just going to – I mean, this is how Miami is going to stay relevant besides the greatness of LeBron and, you know, even Wade to a much lesser extent. You know, you're going to get guys who just, who want to win a championship, and you're going to get guys who, you know, the game's going to be easy for them. The game's going to be easy for Ray Allen. He's not going to have to do a lot of work. I mean, defensively, he's shown that he can commit to being a good team defensive player, but that's not even – they're bringing him in. They're bringing him in to make open shots and to spread the floor to give LeBron James and Dwayne Wade that much more room to operate in terms of dribble penetration. Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson both missed a cut at the Greenbrier Classic. Of course, we're about seven to eight days away. We're about 10 days away from the upcoming British Open. I believe the British Open starts, July 18th. So it's about 10 days away so from the British Open starting. So Phil Mickelson's been awful. I mean, this whole year he's been terrible, just about, other than, you know, the round where he shot 59. That seems like an eternity ago, but the last two months, Phil's been awful. Tiger, a lot of people overreacted him winning in congressional. I didn't see it as that big a deal. I can't take Tiger Woods serious until he wins a major. I don't care how many of these congressionals and, you know, other tournaments that he wins. Until he wins a major, you can't take him serious, period. Coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we will look back at the first half of the baseball season and also look ahead to the second half as well. That's coming up and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back.
sun is suspended to earth in the middle of the universe. Then why is this verse coming 6 times rehearsed? Don't freestyle much when I write them like such words. Amongst the fiends controlled by the screen, what does it all mean? All this is I'm seeing. You being screaming vocal javelin, line of a local unraveling. My wandering got my wonder with crisis and all this crisis. Hitler Satan never knew what nice. Check the papers, well, I've been on ice. More than your eye can see and ears can hear. Year by year, all the sense disappears. Nonsense perseveres, prayers linked with fear. Beware, two triple M. It might feel good, it might sound a little something. But damn the game, if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, behind the game. I got game, she got game, we got game. They got game, he got game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something. But the game, if it ain't saying nothing.
Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Surreal Quinn, taking you, of course, to 12:30 as we discuss the world of sports. Coming up on a dead period in sports, once you get, you know, this All-Star, think about it, with the All-Star break coming up, the Monday you have all the festivities with the home run derby and what have you, Tuesday the game, Wednesday, that Wednesday of the All-Star game, you know, Wednesday would be a travel day. That is probably the deadest time in sports, that Wednesday. No baseball, no NHL, no football, no hockey. So think about that. That Wednesday after the All-Star game, you know, this, it is a, you know, if you're a sports fan, you're reaching. You're reaching, searching for something, searching for stories. Of course, you have some stuff up and coming. Joe Paterno is supposed to be some more insight revealed on the Sandusky Paterno situation that's coming up in the next week or so. So that'll probably keep you occupied. NFL, of course, never goes away with the, and we'll talk more about the Vilma Breeze, the whole Saint, you know, the whole Saint aspect of what's going on with in the NFL. NFL can't come back soon enough, though. I mean, that's all there is to it. NFL training camp start end of the month, so you're really looking forward towards the NFL. Next week, we're going to start previewing some of the top college football teams in the country. So keep it, you know. So be on the lookout for that. We're going to start looking at some of the top. I'm going to give you from next week until the college football season starts, teams that I believe can win a national championship. And of course, you're going to have the playoff system coming. The playoff system will be coming in 2014, which is great from the standpoint of finally college, the presidents and college football is starting to turn the corner and get it right. A 14 playoff, which eventually I think will expand to 8 to 16 teams. I think that, you know, once they see how much money they make off these playoff games, it'll get bigger. So, you know, that's not coming, of course, in 2014. But, so, you know, a lot to do up until the point to when NFL starts here. And again, with, you know, coming up on Monday, I mean, Wednesday, you know, that's not going to be the funnest day of sports if you're a sports fan coming up this particular Wednesday. But it's only one day. Baseball will be back on Thursday. Speaking of the baseball, poll question of the day, of the morning is, who is the best team in baseball as we currently, as we stand? You know, a couple of prime candidates, the usual suspects, Texas Rangers certainly have to be up there. Yankees have to be up there, had a great first half. The Nats, how about the Nationals? They played extremely well over the course of this season. So you have to put them up there. And I would say those would be the three teams that I would put up there as, you know, the best in baseball right now. Those three teams to me kind of stand out. Yankees, Rangers, and Nationals, especially the Rangers and Yankees. I think are on, not on their own level, but really are, you know, have been the cream of the crop to up to this point. Yankees at 50-32 have the best record in baseball. Yankees and Rangers are the only two teams in baseball that have won 50 games. We're going to go through the division momentarily, and I'll tell you Well, I think this is going to happen in each division. A couple of scores from last night. Colorado over the Nationals, 5-1. Yankees, Boston, a typical Yankee Red Sox game at Fenway, 10-8. Yankees take out the Sox. Yankees really have opportunity to bury the Red Sox. Right now, the Red Sox are 8.5 behind. In the AL East. Atlanta shuts out Philadelphia 5-0. Philadelphia continues to struggle. They right now 13 games back of the Nationals in the NL East. Ryan Howard returns, first time since the divisional series back in 2011. Remember, he got hurt on the final out of the divisional series against St. Louis. He got towards Achilles. He's back. Had a single and a double. Great news for Philadelphia getting him back. It might be too little too late, though, as they continue the struggle getting shut out by the Braves. San Francisco, the Giants, 5. Baltimore takes out the Angels, 3-2, in a place. So we're back. Had a little difficulty here, but we're back 57 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. The Phillies have struggled mildly this year, and it's going to be a matter, I'm certain we'll talk to Maluzzi about this, of who gets traded. 13 games out, July 7th, 13 games out, good luck trying to come back. As we go through these divisions here, looking at the AL East, you have the Yankees at 50-32, 5.5 games ahead of Baltimore at 45-38, 7 games ahead of Tampa Bay at 40, who is at 44-40, despite the fact that Tampa Bay did take 2 out of 3 from the Yankees earlier this week. That was a big win by the Yankees on Wednesday, by the way. That was a huge win to avoid a sweep, I thought. Boston, of course, is 42-41. They've had a very uneven season, to say the least. They are at 5. They are at 8.5 out. And listen, this series, I think, is very important to the Red Sox to win these next two games. You go into the break 8.5 out, 9 or 10 or 10.5 out. I don't see them getting back in the race, to be honest with you. I don't, for that division. And I don't think they're going to get, now wild card. You look at the wild card right now, you have the Angels, you have Baltimore, the Angels, and Baltimore, the Angels, and Cleveland. It's kind of like the front runners for the wild card right now. The wild card right now, it's going to be, I say, at least 88 to 90 wins. So it's going to take 88 to 90 wins to get the wild card. But right now, the Yankees clearly look like the head of that division right now. They play great. The bullpen has been just ridiculous. Granderson, Cano, even despite the fact that they were struggling mildly to hit with runners in scoring position, offense has come alive a bit. Just a matter of them getting some of that starting pitching back with CeCe Sabathia. Andy Pettitte's going to be out for a while, but that bullpen has really held the fort down for the Yankees all season long. Baltimore, has steadied the ship. They've been had a roller coaster season, to say the least. Got off to the hot start. 45-38. You can't ask for anything more if you're a Baltimore Oriole fan right now. We know that they're a great offensive team. The question is, can their pitching hold up, especially in the dog days when we hit August, the dog days of summer with August. So that'll be something to keep your eye on if you're a Baltimore fan. They have enough offense where they can go and make a move to get some pitching. So it'll be very interesting to see whether or not they do that. Central, AL Central, you have the White Sox at Chicago White Sox, 46-37. Cleveland at 43-40, 3 games back. But the surprise in this division, and one of the disappointments and surprises in all of baseball, the Detroit Tigers, 42-42, 4.5 games back, you know, getting Prince Fielder, you know, having Justin Verlander, having to me a team that was going to be one of the best, supposed to be one of the best teams in all of baseball. They have just never gotten to any groove whatsoever. Very interesting. I mean, they can play much better. I expect Detroit in the second half to. I still think Detroit is going to win this division. 4.5 games out at this point is nothing. I don't know how long the White Sox can keep this up, but you get the sense you're waiting for Detroit to find to get together and erupt. You know, and again, it might be one of those years where, you know, this might be one of those years where it doesn't happen. But to me, they are still the class of that division. It's only a matter of time before they start playing better baseball. AL West is a two-team race. Texas is at 50-34. The Angels are at 46-38. Pujols has gotten hot. We know about some of the pitching. We know about Jared Weaver and how good he's been. You know about some of the other offensive players the Angels have. Texas is, you know, this is Texas division to lose. It's only a 4-game lead, but it feels more like a 6 or 7 or 8 game lead. Texas, again, along with the Yankees, I believe, are the two best teams in all of baseball. You know, the question is if you're Texas, and I think the Angels will be competitive enough to keep Texas interested to where they don't go into cruise control, which is probably a good thing. I mean, you don't want to go into the postseason. You know, it's one thing. Certainly, you love to win your division, but you don't want to win your division by so many games to where it takes the edge off and you go into the postseason, you know, resting players, resting guys, and you just lose that competitive edge going to the postseason. So I think they will have that, but they're going to win that division without question. Getting 4 games up on the Angels, nobody else, Oakland, Seattle, is even relevant in that division. Whatsoever, in that division, it's a matter of, you know, who gets traded, who gets traded, and buyers and sellers as far as the trade deadline. When you talk about Seattle and Oakland, moving to the National League, the Washington Nationals, 48-33, played great. The offense has started to catch up with the pitching. Ian Desmond having a big year. Nationals, of course, had a couple All-Stars. Ryan Zimmerman starting to get hot. Michael Morse, you expect to have a big second half as he gets his sea legs coming back from the injury. And, you know, the pitching is the pitching. I mean, when you have two of the best pitchers in the league in your rotation and a very good bullpen, you're going to be in every game. Again, the thing to watch for the Nationals is Strasburg. You know, I don't see them skipping him on starts, but what's going to happen with him going in August and September? How are they going to do that in terms of his innings? I just can't see a scenario where you're in the middle of a pennant race, especially if you're in first place. And right now, I'm going to go through the standings. Nationals are 4.5 games up on the Mets, the surprising New York Mets, 45-39. They're 5 games up on the Atlanta Braves at 44-39. They are 8 games up on the Miami Marlins at 41-42. As we are now joined by the Moose, Mark Malusis. It's been a long time, but it's always a pleasure to have him on. Mark, how you doing this morning?
Yo, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm trying to stay cool out here.
Yeah, I know. It is hot as anything today. Air conditioning is the key.
Yes, yeah. Air conditioning, and listen, I told a buddy of mine, you know, last night, there will be no wasted motion this weekend. If I don't have to be at a certain place, I'm not going there. So, yeah, staying is, you know, it is ridiculous down here in the D.C. metro area. I'm sure also in New York as well. Mark, I was just going through the divisions here for baseball. Overall, before we get to the Yankees and Mets, overall, what has been to you the biggest, like if I could ask you for 2 big surprises in all of baseball, give me the 2 biggest surprises in baseball right now.
You know, interesting question. I would say the struggles of the Tigers, you know, defensively, you know, they signed Prince Fielder in the offseason. You know, Jim Leland's team hasn't really got going all that much. And I thought Detroit by this time would probably have, a 5-6-7 game lead as far as their division goes in the American League Central. And then I would say the impact that that Mike Trout has had on the Angels. It was really a blessing in disguise, the injuries that Mike Socha's team had early on in the season, struggling, Vernon Wells going down to an injury, and they were able to call up Trout, who, many would argue right now has been the American League MVP. I mean, I would still give respect to Josh Hamilton, what he's been able to do down in Texas, average well over 300, 26 home runs, 70-plus RBIs, but Trout and the Angels and their resurgence after what was a brutal, first month of the regular season has been great.
Yeah, no coincidence that, as soon as Pujols took off, some of the team that started taking off as well. Yeah, and Trout's been phenomenal. I mean, he's been obviously the equal, if not even more. You just mentioned it then, to what Bryce Harper's done for the Nationals. How about the Yankees here? I mean, the Mets here. I'll get to the Yankees, but the Mets to me have been an intriguing story, considering that before the season, there were really no expectations at all with this team. But this team, 42nd place, 45-39, have been clutch in terms of two-out situations, RBIs with two outs. Wright's been great. You know what R.A. Dickey has done. How surprised or shocked, I should say, have you been by the play of the New York Mets?
I am surprised. I thought at best this year they could be a .500 team, finish 81-81. I thought they'd be a little bit better than a lot of people had thought. I didn't think they'd be this good. I'm not going to come on and think that. They've been great. I mean, they're a good team. I mean, so any way you cut it, I mean, they're a good baseball team. It's not a matter of now waiting for the other shoe to drop. They've been tremendous hitting with runners in scoring position and two out. I think they've scored, it's around 170 runs this year. Their starting rotation led by, R.A. Dickey has been phenomenal for the most part. I know Santana wasn't great last night and really wasn't good at all. The one weakness has been their bullpen, which has been an issue. But I am surprised at how well they have played and really the resiliency the team has shown throughout the course of the regular season.
No question about it, Mark. And you certainly have to give Terry Collins, who started out his tenure with the Mets, now I don't want to say on the hot seat, but, a lot of question marks about whether or not he was the right man for the job, has done a phenomenal job since the beginnings of 2011. I think he's the perfect manager for this particular team. What about, and you mentioned it, the bullpen. We know the bullpen is one of the worst in the National League, one of the worst in baseball statistically. Are the Mets, I don't know what their financial situation is exactly, but are they going to be buyers come, trade deadlines, try to at least, add to that bullpen?
Yeah, I think they will be. I think they will be even before come July 31st. I don't think they can wait on this. I think they were hoping maybe to get some help from the farm and bring in some guys up from there. That hasn't exactly worked out. I think they've proven enough to Sandy Alderson that they are a team of quality, that he needs to go out there and reinforce it. Now, he's not going to trade one commodity after another, and he's not going to give up the farm, and nor will he have to. The names that have been thrown out there are like the Grant Balfours, the Brett Byers, maybe bringing Frankie Rodriguez back, who they traded to the Milwaukee Brewers. Names like that, to where you could trade a player to be maintained later, or a low-level prospect, something of that nature. And they've got to help him reinforce this bullpen sooner rather than later, because the team deserves it. Because it's been too much of the same theme as far as bullpen failure that needs to be resolved.
Mark, how have the fans? Before I get to the fans, there's one guy on the Mets who, to me, has had a revival, so to speak, in this month of June, who I thought would be back in the minors. And probably where I'm going is going direction I'm going with Ike Davis. Ike Davis at the beginning of the season and even into May I'm looking at, you know, watching the Mets game. I'm like, this guy's hitting 195. What is he doing even in the lineup? I talk about his turnaround. You know, yeah, he's only batting 201, but 11 home runs, 45 RBIs going into last night's game. You'll certainly take that over, you know, over a total season as far as where he has a chance to end up with. What has been the difference for him moving in the month of June and moving forward?
You know, I can't really tell you why it's turned around. I mean, they preach patience with him. I'm with you, Sarah. I would have sent him down to the minor leagues. I thought he needed to get healthy, get his confidence back. They decided to hang with him here on the major league level, and you know what? It worked. He was really bad. You know, you could talk about the power numbers, but a lot of unproductive outs. To swing, I mean, his average at one point in time was around like 160, 165. And he would get the start at first base on a pretty regular basis. But he started to see it. I don't know what it was, maybe a little bit of rust from the ankle, maybe the valley fever, which he was diagnosed with, before the start of the year. Maybe that had something to do with it. I'm not really sure. All I know, he couldn't hit a breaking ball to save his life. He was going up there and not having a good approach at the plate. His approach is better. He's a lot patient. He's waiting for his pitches to hit. As you mentioned, you've seen his average now rise to a tick over 200, which means he's on a pretty good clip right now for where we are at this stage of the year. And, you know, I applaud him for it. It wasn't that I was giving up on Ike Davis. I wasn't. I think the guy's got a ton of talent. I think he's going to be the first baseman for the Mets for a long time. It just wasn't working. And I thought the Mets had some other options as far as maybe moving Lucas Duda down to first base. But they were patient with him, and right now their patience is paying off because now he's starting to look like that hitter and that player that was a high draft choice coming out of Arizona State that a lot of people had a lot of high hopes for.
No question about it. Then we're going to shift gears to the Yankees here. And listen, you know, people can talk all they want about the payroll, and what have you, and things of that nature. Yankees have played great baseball over the course of this season, and considering their start that they got off to, have you been, you know, with the injuries and with some of the stuff that they've dealt with, have you been surprised by their level of play over, especially over the course of the last month or so? 50-32, bullpen has been off the charts. We know the offense has picked it up. Talk about that for a second.
As far as the offense goes for the Yankees, or as far as
just how the team has played overall, considering like the start they got off, considering how many injuries that they've had to deal with, the loss of Rivera, which you know was to me more than just losing the best closer of all time from an emotional standpoint. To get over that, are you surprised that they stand where they're at right now, basically in total control of that division, which by the way is a brutal division?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the Rays, you know, the Longoria injury hurt the Rays. You know, Baltimore got off to a very, very good start for Buck Showalter. But, you know, the Orioles have shown some of their warts. The Red Sox have been beleaguered by injuries. It is it's a tough division as far as, and the Yankees have been hit by injuries as well. You know, you mentioned Rivera, Gardner, now Sabathia, Pettit. Lack of production early on from a Mark Teixeira, A-Rod not looking like the same player he once did. But, you know, you look at it, am I surprised that they have this kind of lead? Yes, I think in essence I am surprised that they have this kind of lead. I'm not surprised they're right there at the top of the division. I just thought a couple other teams would probably follow with them, but they haven't. It doesn't mean that the Yankees are going to win this division by 12 or 13 games. I don't think that's going to happen either. But I think you look at it, Soriano's done a tremendous job coming in, closing games out. He's talked about the fact that he enjoys doing that and really plays off the pressure, plays off that kind of moment. And he really has been a reliever, amazingly enough, since being put in that closer's role than he was as a setup man for Mariano Rivera. You know, getting Robertson back helps. If you look at their home run hitting team, they take advantage of having 81 home games at a hitter-friendly ballpark, you know, at the new Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. And their starting pitching, you know, was very, very good until they suffered these two injuries. You know, the starting pitching was very good for Larry Rothschild and Joe Girardi. So you look at it, even with all the injuries, even with struggling to hit with runners in scoring position as a team, you know, they still could go out there and hit a three-run bomb better than anybody else in Major League Baseball. The starting pitching has been very good, and the bullpen's been able to survive, amazingly enough, the loss of Rivera.
How about moving forward as far as, well, give me a timetable on Pettit and Sabathia. I know Pettit's injury is much more serious, so what is going to talk about?
I mean, they were talking about Pettit probably about 2 months. You know, it takes about 6 weeks for the bone to heal, and then he'd probably need another couple of weeks in order to get back. So that happened. So you're looking probably about another, you know, 6 weeks out here. So probably late August we're talking about as far as Andy Pettit is concerned. Sabathia is probably going to be back, you know, after the All-Star break. You know, he is an All-Star. He's not going to pitch out Kansas City for the All-Star game. You know, Cashman mentioned that, you know, they wanted to be extra cautious. Obviously, a groin issue, not a major one, not a major strain. They think that the 15-day disabled list would do the trick. So I imagine Sabathia will be back shortly right after the All-Star break, and then you'd have a rotation of Sabathia, in no particular order, but Sabathia, Corona, Nova, Hughes, and then Freddie Garcia.
I know you don't cover the team, per se, as a beat reporter, but do you get a sense from the stuff that you read and watched on TV that they feel like in this particular series against the Red Sox, as they won last night 10-8, that they have a chance to really put the Red Sox away? I mean, they go out there and sweep the Red Sox. Red Sox are 10.5 out. So, I know there's a lot of owners always put on Yankees and Red Sox, but to me, if I'm a Yankee player or somebody in that organization, I'm really saying to myself, you know what, we can kind of put these guys to the side if we can come out here and dominate this series. Do you get that sense from the things you've heard?
Yeah, I mean, I get that sense. I mean, I think because it is Yankees-Red Sox, I think because of all that and the history between the two organizations, I think for sure you look at it, and I think it is two teams that clearly look at it and say to themselves, you know, this is something that that we can go out there and we can bury the Red Sox here. And, you know, Boston was playing very, very well till the recent road trip. You know, and then again swept by the A's, and Al Pedroia on the disabled list, and they had to deal with the Youkilis situation. You know, Middlebrook's tweaking his hamstring. But I think the Yankees, sure, when you have a rival in a precarious spot, I think there's no question you go out there and you try and go for the throat or try and deal a decisive blow to make it even that more difficult to come back in the second half. Because I think there's a lot of people out there that believe, and I wouldn't say I don't believe this, that come in the second half, the team and the rival that's going to challenge the Yankees could be Boston.
Yeah, I can definitely see it. I mean, Baltimore, you don't expect, I'm not sure about their pitching. We know, you know, Tampa, I don't think is going anywhere as well, but, you know, we're not sure about with them offensively. So, yeah, the Red Sox could be that team, you know, as they get healthier. You know, Crawford should be back. And, you know, we'll see. I still think the Yankees are right now just in complete control of that division. But, I think from a talent standpoint, you're probably right that Boston does have the best chance. How about, sticking with the Yankee theme here, what's the deal with Reggie Jackson? Is he anti-New York now? Is he anti-Yankees and Mets? He went after both organizations over the course of this week with comments he made. And I know he apologized, which I couldn't stand recently. Don't, you know, stick with your statement. Don't backtrack now. But what's been the reaction towards what he said about A-Rod and also what he said about the late Gary Carter?
I mean, I think there's been a lot of backlash. There's a lot of people that really don't care for Reggie Jackson. You know, he runs around as Mr. Yankee, and, you know, he's some sort of
he was a great player, but everybody, any real Yankee fan knows, and you'll notice that he's not viewed upon as being a true Yankee.
No, right. I agree with you. I mean, my you know, growing up with my uncle, you know, growing up listening to my uncle Pete, you know, in his story, it was a long time Yankee fan. You know, was never a Reggie Jackson fan, and you know, was bothered by how, like, you know, he carried himself or conducted himself as being Mr. Yankee when it really wasn't. But, you know, here's what it comes down to. I don't think Reggie's well liked He can feel and he can say whatever he wants to. The problem I have is that, you know, bringing up the likes of a Gary Carter after Gary just passed away. You know, I think it's very unfortunate. I don't think it shows much. You know, I think you, first of all, it's not a way you conduct yourself as a human being. You want to bring up other players that they're not deserving. You want to say that, you know, guys are compilers. He's every right to believe it. He's every right to think it. That's fine. But, you know, I think you have to, you know, if the wound is not healed yet as far as Gary Carter passing away with his battle with brain cancer and losing that battle, I think that was a very, very unfortunate statement, and I think it showed a lack of compassion. I think everyone looks at A-Rod's numbers as far as being cloudy, and it was due to the fact of using steroids. I think anybody that played during that era and has been linked to steroids, obviously their numbers are clouded. The problem I have, biggest of all, is he says that stuff about Alex, and then when he was asked about Andy Pettit, he said, well, Andy is so well-respected in the game, you know,
he's not getting in.
And kind of like split the, you know, kind of split it a little bit due to the fact that Andy's a good guy, so therefore he thinks he'll get into the Hall of Fame. You know, it's one way or the other.
Right.
You know,
you can't
have it both ways, and that's the biggest issue I have.
No, well, he does. Well, Mark, the thing, you bring up a great point. The reason why he does that is he realizes, and Reggie's a smart guy, that A-Rod is an easy lightning rod and is an easy target compared to Andy Pettit, who is, as despite the, you know, what happened with Clemens, is well respected and beloved for what he's done as a Yankee. And Andy Pettit is a true Yankee coming up with,
you know,
the
that's a great point. That is a great point. I think that's a very fair point, and it's a good way to look at it. He took on, what Reggie did was he took on an easy target, and Alex Rodriguez is an easy target because he knows, despite the, you know, whatever relationship he has, he knows Alex Rodriguez is not a guy that's well liked throughout baseball or here throughout the tri-state area.
Well, one last one for me, Mark, and this is more not a question but a comment. I don't know how much my listening audience will notice, but, you know, if you're a sports talk radio fan, you certainly do will notice that WFAN, the station that Mark works for, recently celebrated its 25th anniversary as far as being on the air. They were the first to start the format of 24 hours, 7 days a week, you know, 365 in terms of all sports. And the reason why I, you know, bring Mark into this, Mark was a producer, and also, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, board op for the Mike and the Mad Dog program, which...
No, that's correct.
Which was the industry standard for, you know, listening for a duo in terms of sports talk. So the reason I bring this up is to give you, you know, how do you feel personally about being a part of a station that really has been, you know, the Mount Rushmore as far as sports talk radio? I mean, that's, you know, you can, there are 700 stations in all across the country, but this station was the first to do all sports talk. You were, you know, you played a role in terms of, again, being a producer of the Mike and the Mad Dog show. What are your thoughts on that real quick?
You know, it's a great honor. You know, I grew up wanting to get into this profession. You know, I feel lucky. I feel, blessed to be able to have worked at WFAN. Cyril, it's, you know, I've learned a lot. I've grown, you know, and grown as a broadcaster, working on, you know, our craft and working on, you know, the art form. And that's what it is. I mean, it is an art form. You know, you have to be passionate. You got to be knowledgeable. You got to be entertaining. You got to know what you're talking about. And I learned a lot, you know, being able to work with Mike and Chris for 6 years, three as a board op, three plus as a producer. You know, I learned from the best in the industry standard. And it was an opportunity that was afforded to me, you know, a year and a half or about 2 years out of college, nearly. And I feel really lucky. I really do. And, you know, it's something that's been a lot of fun. And a lot of great memories along the way, I've been working at WFAN since August of 2000. I worked with Mike and Chris Starton in March of 2001. So it's been a while. It's been a long time. It's amazing how quickly time flies. It really does.
Yeah,
I can't believe
it. It is. It is.
But it's been a lot of fun.
Well, Mark, you know, you do a wonderful job. Thank you for coming on the program. And again, we look forward to having you on as we head into the dog days of the baseball season, or the dead period of sports, which is going to be coming soon as far as this when the All-Star break hits. But there'll be a lot of trade talk, you know, chatter after the All-Star break, and we look forward to having you on. Again, thanks for coming on.
Daryl, anytime, man. You know that. Just hit me up and try and stay cool this weekend, all right?
Yeah, I will. All right, that's Mark Malusis. All right, take it easy. That, of course, is Mark Malusis joining us. As always, he does a wonderful job of giving you insight on Yankees, Mets, baseball all around. And listen, you know, if you're a New York fan, you have to be very excited right now. It's a great time. You got the Mets in second place in the AL East and certainly in the wild card mix as well. And you have the Yankees in total control right now, as far as I'm concerned, of the American League East at 5.5 games, up 6 in the loss column ahead of the Baltimore Orioles, who've had a wonderful year in their own right. I mean, Baltimore has been a franchise that has not been a factor since 1997, the last time they went to the playoffs. So they play extremely well, very offensive-laden team, entertaining. So it should be exciting. You know, baseball right now, this is the thing about baseball. I'm going to give you two names, R.A. Dickey and Tim Lincecum. Who would you take right now? R.A. Dickey, of course. But my point is, that's baseball. And if I asked you that question last year or 2 years ago, you would have been like, first of all, you would have been like, who is R.A. Dickey? You would have laughed. And then after you found out who R.A. Dickey was, you would have laughed me out of the room. But baseball is a way of just, you know, being as unpredictable as any sport around. And certainly you are going to be looking forward towards a great All-Star game and also a great second half of the baseball season. I did go a couple of things before we head on out, as we've got about 90 seconds here. Did go see Spider-Man last night, and it was still, even coming out the movie theater about 9:30, was just ridiculously hot. But I was pleasantly surprised. Now, the star of the movie cried too many times. I mean, it was a little bit too emotional. But I thought the action was good. You know, the writing could have been better. Writing could have been much better. Martin Sheen is a monster. And I don't have to tell you, man, Martin Sheen is a great actor. He's been doing it for like 30 plus years. He's been just tremendous. Martin Sheen, him as Peter Parker, not his father, but him and his Uncle Ben, and he just, it was a blast in the past. I mean, you had Martin Sheen in there, Sally Field as the aunt. You had C. Thomas Howe had made a appearance, and I was like, that's C. Thomas Howe? Like, so you had Soul Man in there, so it was a pretty good movie. I recommend it. It's a good, especially good summer movie, good popcorn movie. Some of the changes they tried to make by, you know, not having him, having him reveal himself as far as, you know, take his mask off, and they try to humanize him that much more. So, you know, he's cracking some jokes. So, listen, I walked away about 2 hours and 10 minutes, walked away feeling good about going to see the movie. I wasn't expecting much, but pretty good movie, and I just recommend it. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We will return next week. Have a great week. So long.